I've told the president before. I said, Mr. President, tweeting less would not cause brain damage. But he has decided this is the way he wants to communicate. And I do not believe his original comments were racist. I do not believe he is a racist. And but if the Democrats want to continue to pursue this line and say that America is a wicked country and it was wicked when it was founded and it's even more wicked today and we need to tear it down and start over, I don't think the American people believe that. I may be wrong, but I doubt it.
And finally, June 17th is National Hot Dog Day. Now, Offers.com did a survey and found that out of the 100 people surveyed, 33% like mustard as their favorite condiment on a hot dog. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. My name is David Lazar, and I am your host. Before we get to a jam-packed episode, including an exclusive interview with Islanders play-by-play broadcaster Brendan Burke, let's go over the live and local weather forecast. Tonight, we've got heavy rain and fog in the area. It will be a low of 73 degrees, so hot and muggy outside. Tomorrow, the thunderstorms are back with a high of 87 degrees and more fog likely. Friday, the sun starts to come out. We do have a heat wave coming in. It will be 94 degrees on Friday and sunny, 99 degrees on Saturday and sunny. We could hit that 100-degree mark. And then Sunday, we do have a few thunderstorms coming in, but it will still be hot. So get ready for a heat wave. But before that comes, let's go over a live episode of Destination Hockey with Brendan Burke, some free agency talk, and some big news that you might want to know. So from the destination of all things hockey, we'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Silly season is over and the death of the off-season has finally arrived. But don't worry. That will not stop us from diving into the world of hockey and continuing to make this sport a destination. My name is David Lazar, and today on Destination Hockey, we have Islanders play-by-play broadcaster Brendan Burke on the show to chronicle a historic Islander season, share the secrets to his famous pregame monologues, and update us on the Premier Lacrosse League. Before we get to that, however, there are some moves to discuss. Let's go around the National Hockey League and talk about a lot of two-year deals, a very unique time for those specific contracts, and a big trade that went down since our last show. First, the local New Jersey Devils are back in the headlines, signing Jack Hughes to an entry-level deal. Nothing much to talk about there. They're signing their star player, their star rookie. He will be in the red and black next season. But a depth move that I do want to highlight is Connor Carrick re-signing with New Jersey on a two-year, $3 million contract. Carrick isn't a guy that you might know if you're a casual Devils fan. He is a depth defenseman that came over from Dallas last year in the Ben Lovejoy trade that not a lot of people know. However, you should know about him because he has the potential to be a solid depth defenseman for the Devils, a team that needs him. Carrick is getting a $200,000 raise over the next two seasons. That comes after a $1.3 million per year average annual value contract that he signed with Toronto and played with Dallas. Carrick's a good player. He has the potential to really emerge as a solid two-way defenseman. Last season, Carrick came over from the Dallas Stars and played 20 of 21 games for the Devils after being acquired in that trade. Now that you might think, oh, it's not a lot, but Lovejoy was that stalwart stay-at-home defenseman, and Carrick replaced him in that role. He played a lot of 5-on-5 time and developed an offensive game, 1 goal, 6 assists in 20 games. His .35 point-per-game rate in New Jersey was his best ever in his NHL career. So how does he follow up a really solid half season? It looks like he might be riding the pine, and that is because he will have to battle for minutes. Right now, he slots in on the right side behind P.K. Subban, Sammy Vatanen, and Damon Severson. Devils might not be the best team, but that's a really good defensive side on the right-hand side. Those are three defensemen that you're really not going to do much better than. So Carrick slots in as that seventh defenseman role. However, here is the interesting factor about this signing. By giving Carrick a two-year deal, they're committing to him. And you don't usually, it could happen, the Devils could have done it, they have the cap space, but you don't usually give a depth defenseman, a third pair, seventh defenseman guy, that $1.5 million per year deal. So, could Sammy Vatanen be moved? Vatanen's a bigger name, he's an offensive defenseman. He started off when acquired from Anaheim for Adam Henrique. He was that more top offensive defenseman. Now P.K. Subban's here, and he will take that spot. Vatanen may be able to net a player to fit more of a need for the Devils, like a left winger for the second line, or a middle six forward. Connor Carrick in, he's back. Sammy Vatanen could be on the move. Jacob Vrana is also back for the Capitals, and he signed a two-year $6.7 million contract, and that's a solid value for him because he's coming off a career season with 24 goals. That was third on the team. He also added 23 assists, so it wasn't one of those one-dimensional seasons where he just put the puck in the net. For a 23-year-old, that's a solid stat line. But here's where it gets negative. He only tallied 0 points, so he didn't get any points in the playoffs for the Capitals, and he was an no-show, absolutely non-apparent, and that affected the Capitals. If he contributes a few goals, maybe the Capitals are playing the Islanders instead of the Hurricanes. After re-signing Vrana, the Capitals now only have $1 million in salary cap space. So they're used to being tight against the cap, but now they truly are very tight. However, they've got a good team. Alexander Ovechkin's 33, Nicholas Backstrom's 31, TJ Oshie's 32. Those are your top three forwards. That's pretty good. And then Vrana coming in at 23, Tom Wilson and Evgeny Kuznetsov, really good top six there. Jacob Vrana fits in nicely because he's 23 and has that speed element that no one else on the roster can match with the exception of Carl Hagelin, who's back on a four-year deal. And to get him to a two-year bridge deal, it's a nice perk for the Capitals because they tried it with Burakovsky and he went to Colorado on a one-year deal. He didn't work out. Could the same happen with Vrana? It doesn't look like it, because Vrana's a little better than Burakovsky. I do believe this deal will help the Capitals over the next 2 years. They're always against the cap. Will they be able to afford Vrana in 2 years? Maybe not. But if they wanted to go a long-term deal, he's getting $5, $6 million a year. The Capitals cannot afford that. They would have been over the cap threshold in to the 10%, like the Vegas Golden Knights, like the Maple Leafs. That's a situation you never want to be in. Ryan Dzingel was also in a precarious situation as he was not signed deep into July, and he just got locked up with the Carolina Hurricanes on a two-year, $6.75 million contract. Dzingel, he's 27, and he had a combined 26 goals and 30 assists last season between Ottawa and Columbus. He wasn't always that big name. He's always been an underdog in his career after being drafted in the seventh round. But last year was his coming out party. For Ottawa, he really emerged as that speed guy, similar to Jakub Vrana, who could put the puck in the net, score some goals, assist on some goals, and be a solid offensive player. Dzingel comes to Carolina, and they need him because Dzingel, unlike Michael Ferland, who recently departed, speed, speed, speed is his game. He loves to skate fast, he loves to get in the dirty areas, and he is what Carolina needs. He's always been a good player, however, he's just never gotten that shining light in his name. He was a Hobey Baker finalist for the award in 2014, still drafted in the seventh round, though. And I love this signing for Carolina, just because at that deal, the owner, Tom Dundon, can say he paid the appropriate price for Dzingel. That's what he's deserving, that's what he's really should have gotten on the open market. They got a good contract for a good player, and now they have the cap space in their internal budget. Again, Carolina, as we've talked about the last few weeks, Carolina doesn't go up to the cap floor. They go up to their own little internal budget, so I doubt they go up and fill their whole salary cap. So now they have enough money for Justin Williams. The team's captain will be 38 at the start of next season, and his second tour of duty with the Hurricanes ended very well last season. He contributed 23 goals and 30 assists. Carolina thinks Williams will be back. And that's important because now with Dzingel, now with Williams, now with a lot of players coming in, Carolina is looking to re-up as a really good team for next season. Another player that I love is Ryan Donato, and he re-signed with the Wild on a two-year, $3.8 million contract. And this is a great deal for all parties. Donato tallied 16 points in 22 games last season for the Wild after coming over in that trade with Boston. This is a wild card signing for Minnesota where you could be getting a 30-goal scorer for $1.9 million a year. He never shied away from shooting, and that's what I love. A lot of players in the NHL, whether on the power play, the PK, 5-on-5, players just don't shoot the puck. They just do not shoot the puck. They hold. They go for the pass. And that's where Donato says, not me. He shot the puck 64 times in 22 games. That's three shots a game, and that's something not a lot of players do. There are nights where players go 0-4 and just don't put up a shot. Ryan Donato's not one of those players, and I love this signing because it's a good bridge deal again. He's betting on himself. The Wild are protected in case he doesn't develop into what he's anticipated, and he is protected in terms of if he goes out for the next 2 years and just really dominates, he's getting a $5 million, $6 million per year deal that a player like Jacob Vrana could have commanded after two good seasons previously. Good deal for Ryan Donato. Jordan Binghamton, the star of the playoffs, St. Louis Blues netminder, he also got a good deal. He re-signed with the Blues, 2 years, $8.8 million. And here's an interesting case because negotiations did not begin until 2 weeks ago. Binghamton was doing his tour of duty after being the star of the NHL coming out of nowhere. He was at the ESPYs, the NHL Awards Ceremony, the Stanley Cup, the NHL Draft, free agency. So much was happening in the NHL, in his world, that he couldn't even have time to begin negotiating. And the belief was that they started talking long term. But it would have had to have been a 7-year, $45 million deal in that range. That's around $6.5 million per year, and that is way too high for the St. Louis Blues. They're not interested because they need to see more from Binghamton. You can't just have one half of a good season and then commit $45 million to someone. And plus, they've got some free agents coming up. Petrangelo and Shen are free agents next offseason, and there are some players in arbitration like Ivan Barbashev and Joel Edmondson, as well as Oscar Sundqvist, that need new deals. This Binghamton deal allows him to prove himself over the next 2 years, not get 1 year, because if it went to arbitration, they would have gone 1 year and he would have got paid less. It is a classic case of a good deal for good players, good team, and both parties. Blackhawks, Ottawa Senators, they also did something similar, a good deal for both sides. The Blackhawks traded Artem Anisimov to the Senators for Zach Smith. And this is one of those math weird contract situations that I'd love to dive into. I won't try to make it too confusing, but basically the Senators took a cap hit that was more money. But since the Blackhawks already paid Anisimov's signing bonus, they actually are giving less money to the player. So the Senators are back at it again with their habit of not liking to spend a lot of money. Rumor was that they wanted to get rid of Cody Ceci because he had a vegan diet and they didn't like stocking the fridge with vegan food. So the Senators are not the most luxurious team, and they get a player who they feel is better. I disagree, but they feel they get a better player at a higher cap hit for less money. It's a glitch in the salary cap that has led some people to believe that the NHL might want to go to a soft cap just because of deals like this that are complete glitches in the spectrum of salary cap world. But I love this deal because the Blackhawks are getting a player that is loyal, really gritty, hardworking, can win faceoffs. He compiled 28 points, this is Smith, in 70 games last season for the Senators. He was an alternate captain. He's known for being a power forward, playing a role in the penalty kill, playing the power play, doing everything. This man can do everything, and he will do that for the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks, they also get some cap space. The Senators get more cap hit. The Blackhawks get a cap space that they desperately need because now they have some financial breathing room to make transactions that they need to do, like re-signing Brendan Perlini and possibly adding another unrestricted free agent, because as the Blackhawks usually do, they've got a bottom six right now compiled of all these depth ELC players that don't exactly make the best case that this team should be a playoff team. So the Blackhawks will look to make more moves. The Senators finally get to the cap floor, and a lot of moves have been made. So now that we've gone around the NHL, let's get to the moment you have all been waiting for. a talk with the one and only Brendan Burke. From the destination for all things hockey, we will be right back.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. Today I am joined by Islanders play-by-play broadcaster and the voice of the Premier Lacrosse League, Brendan Burke. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. The Premier Lacrosse League, a dynamic, unique look at a really cool sport. How did the opportunity to voice the league arise?
Yeah, no, it came through NBC. I've worked with them the last few years in terms of some NHL games, and once the playoffs roll around, I've kind of been part of their stable. So, they came to me early on in the process before I think even the league was announced and just kind of floated the idea to see if I was interested in it, which obviously I was pretty interested in it. So it kind of progressed from there, and as things went along and found out, I guess it was just early part of the spring that I was officially going to be the guy that was going to be able to do this inaugural season, and it's been great. We're more than halfway through the regular season. It's been fun in general just to be a part of the sport of lacrosse and to do it at a high level and the best players in the world, but on top of that, to be part of something from the very beginning, from the ground up, to kind of almost see them create rules as it's gone along and just kind of feel their way through this first season. It's been a very cool thing to be a part of.
How did calling lacrosse games at Ithaca College help you with this gig?
None. I had done so little of it. It was so long ago that I kind of almost had to retrain myself on how to do it. And really, the collegiate game to the pro game is an entirely new animal. And that D3 college lacrosse 15 years ago compared to what it is now is just it's night and day. So. I really kind of had to start from scratch and watched a lot of the cross and talked to a lot of broadcasters and just kind of approached it as if I had really zero experience in the sport, because I had next to none.
So how fun was it to kind of immerse yourself in watching games, talking to people, learning all the players, differentiating the teams? How much of an experience was it for you to really just learn something from scratch?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to do a sport. I mean, what I do is fun in general, but it's fun to do a sport to kind of learn it. you know, I had to really learn it in terms of, you know, rules and vocabulary and things like that. So I actually spent a good chunk of time both in person and on the phone with Joe Beninati, who's the Washington Capitals broadcaster. And he not only is a phenomenal play-by-play broadcaster and has done the cross both collegiately and professionally for a long time, he also happened to play lacrosse when he was in college. So he has a unique perspective on the game, knows it inside and out, and could, I guess, kind of translate things for me from a lacrosse perspective to a hockey perspective to make it easier for me to understand it. So he was extremely helpful, you know, in the process. And, I mean, I'm talking during an Islanders Capitals morning skate, you know, he and I just sitting in the stands talking lacrosse for an hour. So he was a huge help that really kind of laid the foundation for what I was able to do on my own after that.
And two sports where they actually are pretty similar. You've said that before. They're both fast, and especially with the Premier Lacrosse League, different than, as you said, D3. It's very fast and a lot of shooting, just like hockey. So how cool is it to kind of, you know, see two sports that are similar yet so different?
Yeah, I wasn't sure how much it would feel similar just because, I mean, nothing moves as fast as hockey. But thankfully, the rule changes that they made in the PLL have been great at facilitating kind of that speed they were looking for, which made it feel more natural to me. They cut 10 yards out of the field compared to collegiate lacrosse. They cut it out of the middle of the field, so the goals are 10 yards closer together, which feeds transition in terms of the speed, and there's less downtime. Shot clock in NCAA is 80 seconds. Shot clock in Major League Lacrosse is 60 seconds. Shot clock in the PLL is down to 52, and they were toying with 45. They were toying with 45 during training camp. So, and I think they tried 45 and it was too fast. So they kind of split the difference between 45 and 60, but still, you know, there's not a lot of just hanging out, substituting and slowing the game down, which is a big part of what is college lacrosse. But this is kind of as close to hockey on ice field as you're going to get.
Yeah, I do a lot of lacrosse for the Hofstra Chronicle, and this is funny because you get the 80-second shot clock, and teams are still getting shot clock violations left and right. To cut that in half, that must be crazy.
Yeah, and you know, it hasn't necessarily led to higher scoring games, which you would think, more possession, more goals, but, I mean, it's the defense is so good, the offenses are so good. You know, it just kind of, what it does is kind of alter your substitution game a little bit and kind of forces players to play the whole field, which is fun. You know, and you can kind of trap guys that don't normally play defense on the defensive half the field because you just don't substitute and it doesn't give them an opportunity to. So it creates a whole new level of strategy to the game.
In-game interviews with players, round-robin style format where three games are played per weekend. A lot of unique things happen in the PLL. What is your favorite part?
Just because I heard you mention this, it's three games a weekend, but it's not a round-robin tournament. It's not some sort of traveling show. It is a league. It just doesn't happen to have homes for each of the individual teams. So it's a 10-week regular season schedule. At the end, they will have standings. There are standings. The top four teams will have a chance to play in a playoff-style bracket for a championship. The bottom two teams and a couple of the others that lose in that first round will actually play in a different bracket, and the winner of that bracket will get the first overall pick in the next year's draft. So, you know, to kind of cut away from tanking, but it's a full blown regular league. It just doesn't happen to have a home base for each of the teams. So, you know, that's kind of a cool model where we get to touch a different market every single week. We're starting to go west. We've got the All-Star game coming up next weekend in Los Angeles, and then we get Denver and San Jose, and we start to, you know, kind of branch out to the west where we've been almost exclusively in the East Coast.
A market that certainly loves their lacrosse, that's Long Island, and they also love their Islanders. Finally, after years of struggle, it appears the Islanders faithful is getting their arena. Why is this so important for the team and the fan base?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the fan base and for everybody, I mean, just the long-term viability of the team and knowing that this is the home base, this is the permanent home for the New York Islanders. There are no more rumors about anybody moving anywhere and just kind of making sure that this is what every other team wants and has, which is a home building that they know that they're going to be in forever. And I think that's exactly what they're going to get with Belmont. Plus, on top of that, if you want to compare it to some other situations, having a building that is owned and operated and specifically designed for the NHL tenant is not something that everybody has. A lot of them share with NBA buildings. They happen to be the primary tenant, and the hockey just kind of works around that. You know, with the Islanders, they're going to build this building. Their owners are building the building. It is going to be designed for hockey. They are going to be the main tenant. They will have control over a lot of things that they don't now. So, you know, for the hockey team specifically, I think that'll be a great change for, you know, what they've dealt with for the past, you know, decade, 20 years, 25 years of trying to get, you know, exactly what is about to happen solidified.
This arena has been a perfect example of two sides working together to create something better for everyone. As the voice for all fans, not just ones in favor of this arena, how nice is it to see the compromise and effort put into the planning stages?
Yeah, well, this is something that I think that, you know, there's so many upsides to it, but people obviously have to understand that, you know, there are other perspectives, and there are people that live in that neighborhood that don't necessarily embrace the idea, but, you know, to be able to kind of understand that this is for the greater good of not just, you know, the Islanders and hockey fans, but, you know, you talk about that area and with the train station being a huge part of it, I mean, that's a game changer, right? Like, that's a game changer, not just for hockey fans, but for people coming to the events or the hotel or the restaurants or whatever they're coming to, but the people that live there that now are traveling a lot shorter distance to get to and from work and can jump right on the main line there. I mean, that's the game changer. So getting that piece as a part of it hopefully will take it from people that didn't see how it would benefit them or benefit the surrounding communities. And this kind of says, hey, it's a no-brainer. This is going to help your community.
And this isn't a situation like Phoenix or other arenas where the Islanders are begging the state for money. John Ledecky and Scott Malkin are stepping up and paying a large percentage of this bill on all fronts, whether it's the station, whether it's the arena. Why is that so important for everyone involved?
I mean, for a number of reasons. I think just so many times when you get taxpayer money tied up in arenas, that's how it gets shut down. Exactly. That's how people say that I don't want my money going to that. When you take that out of the equation, it kind of removes a lot of the roadblocks, you would think. You know, it's all public money. And then on top of that, you mentioned that they're paying for the station. I mean, they're paying for the vast majority of what is going to be a public Long Island Railroad station. So not only are they paying for their own building, but they're also helping out, you know, everybody else in the process by paying for what you would think would normally be, you know, state money, government money to some degree. You know, they're taking care of that as well.
And the players, too, are benefiting. How will this affect Islanders, prospective Islanders, free agents, now that the team finally has this stable future on Long Island?
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know how much effect it's had on any of the leading up to it. I don't necessarily think it's as big as a deal as a lot of people are making it out to be, but this will kind of level the playing field. It will no longer be used as an excuse or, hey, we don't know what's happening. You know, but I think from the player's perspective, if you're talking about quality of life, and that's what you always talk about with players who are trying to sign 5, 6, 7, 8-year deals is quality of life, because this is what their business is. This is where their family is. This is what their life is. The New York Islanders are going to practice at their practice facility, which is right down the street from the Coliseum, no matter what. You know, they spent millions and millions of dollars upgrading that facility. That's not going to change no matter where their arena is built. So to have the practice facility close by to where the game rink is going to be, and have kind of a radius for players to live and be convenient to both of those locations. I mean, games are obviously a big part of it. There's 41 of them throughout the regular season. But most of their time is consumed on the practice rink. So, yeah. You know, having a good setup there, having a good game rink, and having a nice area in between where players can kind of, you know, lay their roots and have a home base, I mean, that's going to be certainly a nice thing for Islanders prospective players and their current players alike.
On the ice, the Islanders, definitely something to celebrate, whether it was at the Coliseum or Barclays Center. After one of the most surprising seasons in franchise history, right up there with the Cup runs, the future certainly looks bright. How much fun was calling all the games last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's found money, right? It's more exciting when the expectations are lower, and certainly no one expected where they wound up last year. So to just kind of, you know, see it firsthand, and it was easy to believe when you watched it every night, but, you know, just kind of seeing the rest of the league and the media kind of all realize that it wasn't smoke and mirrors throughout the season, to see how they were able to, you know, be better than the sum of their parts, you know, which was exactly how they got as far as they did. I think that was really an interesting thing to watch, and It just kind of rewrites everything when you look at rosters and you try and think of who's going to be the best team. It's not always the team on paper. It's not always the team with the highest paid players or the amount of all-stars. Sometimes it is just the best team. And they kind of proved that again last year that, you know, you can build a team without a team full of superstars and still have some success.
Being around the locker room, you truly saw how the prove people wrong attitude transcended this group of guys. This team, they had a chip on their shoulder. Can you just attest to what that truly meant?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when John Tavares left, it just became, you know, this avalanche of, well, the Islanders are not going to be competitive this season because he walked out the door. And that was, you know, prevalent throughout the media. And you can bet that Islanders players and management and coaching staff were right there to read that along with everybody else. And then how many people picked them to finish last. And, you know, that's tough to hear. I mean, think about that. You know, one person leaves, just one single person leaves and your whole team's left for dead. And you have to think as a guy that was left back behind, hey, that's not right. We're more than just what he was able to do. And they went out there and proved that. So, you know, and then kind of along the similar lines, like I was alluding to, nobody believed it. Nobody thought that they were actually good. It was like, oh, when are they going to come back down? Their shooting percentage is way too high. Their save percentage is going to come back down to earth. Like all of these different excuses as to why they can't be a 100-point team. You know, and so it kept just kind of fed them through the whole year of just, you know, forcing people to realize that they were better than they were being given credit for.
You mentioned the morning skates with other broadcasters, just hearing the general consensus of the fan base and the NHL as a whole. When did you start to get the feeling that other people started truly believing in what the Islanders had to offer?
When they clinched the playoff spot, I mean, really, like it just was never there. It was every team thought that they were better than the Islanders, and that didn't necessarily play out the way they thought it would throughout the season. So, you know, there was never a full on sense of, wow, those guys are good. It just had the feeling in talking to people, other broadcasters after games, it was, they gave every team the thought that my team had a bad night the night they played the Islanders.
That's interesting.
And it was not necessarily, whoa, that's a good team. It was, boy, we played poorly tonight. And it's like, maybe the opposition had something to do with why you played poorly tonight. Because that was a theme that we got throughout the year. It was like, oh, we were playing so well, but we played poorly tonight against the Islanders. And it's like, no, that's what happens when you play the Islanders. So there was a lot of, I guess, explaining on the other end of why it wasn't the Islanders for their wins. It was why the teams they were playing against were playing poorly. But believe me, there was a correlation there between the two.
With one man leaving, John Tavares, two men came in, Barry Trotz, Lou Lamoriello, plus a plethora of new staff. Those two men, as you said, when we talked last year in our final question, you said that adding a coach like Barry Trotz would do wonders for the team. How did it do wonders for the team?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously he got an instant buy-in from the team because of where he was coming from. And the guy literally walked in the room 2 weeks after getting a Stanley Cup ring. And, you know, how could you not listen to him? And the team was primed for somebody to tell them what to do. I think they would have gotten buy-in from almost any coach that had walked in just because of how poorly and defensively it had gone wrong the year before. And so to have somebody come in that had the perfect message and the perfect schemes for how to fix them defensively, you know, it just was kind of created the perfect storm. And it was funny to hear Barry Trotz talk about fixing the team defensively, because in everybody's eyes, that was the biggest glaring hole that they had, was fixing the 293 goals allowed for the 17-18 season. And he always said fixing the defense was easy.
Yeah.
He knew that was easy because he knew how to fix it. It was just a matter of getting the guys to believe that he knew what he was talking about, and then on top of that, having them go out and execute it. But he never doubted that he could fix the defense. He just doubted whether or not the guys would buy into it as quickly as they did, and they did from day one. You know, probably took until maybe close to Thanksgiving before they had it down. But still, they were in from day one, and, you know, they won a Jennings Trophy because of it.
From what you saw at practices, how were they laid out differently, the intensity of a Barry Trotz coach practice?
It's kind of hard to speak to, just because practice is such a different animal for everybody. And, you know, once the season gets going, not everybody's out there. And,
sure.
You know, it's a lot more morning skates than it is practices. But You know, I just think that it's very structured. It's very, I think maybe even more so what we didn't see, you know, behind closed doors and in meetings and a lot of meetings and different things like that with video. And they had a lot of one-on-one meetings with players, and everybody had a very defined role. And there was no ambiguity about what their role was. Everybody knew exactly what was expected of them. You know, and for the most part, they went out and hammered it home and hit a home run with every guy. So, you know, I think that was a very big thing when you talk to players about the biggest difference. It was, I know what my role was. It was very laid out for me, and it made it easier to go out and do my job.
We certainly saw a lot of home runs last season. You had the John Tavares game, the return to the Coliseum on December 1st, Barzal's hat trick, the Winnipeg game, the comeback. Just so many lifelong, literally lifelong memories that were made just this year. Mind taking us through some of your favorites and just how special the Islanders were last season?
Yeah, I think, you know, the return of the Coliseum has to be, you know, up there, especially, you know, personally for me, if I had never called a game at the Coliseum. So the return was my first. And so to kind of experience that for the first time and to have that game be, you know, an Islanders win, and just to kind of hear the crowd get louder and louder as the game went along and just kind of feel that emotion for the first time, you know, that was pretty cool. You know, the Tavares game, both, you know, in Toronto with Barzal's hat trick and back to Coliseum, you know, those are memorable games because they were some of the best games the Islanders played all year. You know, the 4-0 shutout in Toronto was like, whoa, maybe they are good. You know, and obviously, when John came back, that first game, it was like nothing I've ever experienced. So, you know, those ones obviously stick out. You know, clinching on home ice for the playoffs was certainly one that stood out. You know, that Winnipeg comeback was remarkable for the way it finished. It was kind of a bad game before that, but certainly a fun finish. You know, and then that first playoff game at the Coliseum. You know, the Bailey overtime winner, that certainly sticks out as one of the best ones for me.
And when the Winnipeg game comes to mind, you think of the Eberle call. Eberle's coming back, Nelson's coming back, Lee's coming back, the Islanders bringing in some new talent too, and Semyon Varlamov. How do you think the Islanders are going to look next season with bringing so many strong, talented players back?
Yeah, I mean, they look good. They look very similar, obviously, to last year. I don't know. You know, there's still a lot of time here before the season starts, and whether or not Lou's got any moves up his sleeve. I think that, you know, certainly not necessarily through free agency, but I think that the trade market is still very much alive, you know, leading into the season. And you kind of hit this lull after that first push of free agency where, you know, people go on vacation, take a break. They were in the draft. They kind of come back and, you know, get going for developmental camp. You know, July and August kind of slow down. But, you know, once you get around towards the start of the season and September kicks around, everybody's going to be assessing their team and seeing what happens. And, you know, I think the biggest question marks for the Islanders coming in is health. Is what is the health status of Cal Clutterbuck? What is Andrew Ladd's status going to be coming into the season? How do these guys look coming off major injuries? Obviously, Ladd had two, you know, but Clutterbuck's back injury, you know, that's life-changing. So do you want to see how those guys bounce back and how big of a role they're going to be able to play? And if that role is sufficient enough, or they need somebody else in those roles, or they need somebody to complement them, you know, those are, to me, the biggest questions about this Islanders team. You know, I don't have a Robin Leonard leaving and Varlamov coming in. That's a difference, obviously, but I don't think that's necessarily a step back, as everybody is alluding to, because, you know, the wonders of Mitch Korn and Piero Greco and the way the Islanders defense plays, I think Varlamov is a prime candidate to kind of fill that void. They're not going to ask him to play 60 games. They're going to ask him to play 40. So, you know, I certainly think that he can handle that. But like I said, the biggest questions for me right now are the health of guys like Clutterbuck and Ladd.
Another thing that many people seem to forget is Thomas Greiss is still there, and he had some moments where he was stopping the Pittsburgh Penguins in overtime, three saves in the shootout, and just serving as a brick wall. He also was with Robin Leonard as a star goaltender. How does he coming back really cement the Islanders' goaltending tandem with the new addition in Varlamov?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Greiss' numbers, and if Robin Leonard wasn't on the team or didn't put up incredible, you know, Vezina nominee numbers, you know, Thomas Greiss is going to get a lot of credit because his save percentage was right there. His goals against average is right there. You know, so you come in, and if you expect that again from Thomas Greiss, that takes a lot of the pressure off of Varlamov, you know, because no one's going to have to play 65, 70 games. And at the same time, you know, Thomas Greiss can be a backbone if they need him to. They have somebody to lean on. If somebody go, if Varlamov goes down or he goes down, you should still be in a good spot. So I think that they put themselves in a good place because Thomas Greiss was a big part of their success last year, even if he doesn't get the credit for it. I think he might actually like it better that way. I think he likes to fly under the radar a little bit, but he's certainly a big part of what they built last year.
Finally, another important piece about the Islanders organization, not just roster, is Bridgeport. They had seven signings today, seven signings last week, finally looking like a team that could contend for years to come. The Islanders working on that organizational depth. You worked with Allen before. How cool is it to have Bridgeport really good plus the Islanders really good as well?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, I spent 8 years in the American Hockey League and 10 years in minor league hockey, and you know, there are different organizations that treat their AHL affiliate differently. Some use it as a literal garage for spare parts, and it's just, hey, we've got to have our prospects somewhere to play. We'll just, you know, have to make sure we have, you know, 18 other guys on the ice that night, and that's the end of it. But some realize that you want, you know, your young players learning from veterans that know what they're doing. You want players understanding what a winning environment is, and so you surround them with talent and not necessarily guys that are going to move the needle at the NHL level, but guys that are, you know, quality contributors to the American Hockey League. Brent Thompson, who I know, actually dating back to my days in Peoria, does a fantastic job developing talent. So they're kind of playing that fine line between developing players and winning hockey games. And if you can do those both at the same time, you know, that's the dream. And I think that the Islanders are, treating Bridgeport that way. And I think that's going to serve the organization well in the long run.
For those of you just tuning in, I am here with Islanders broadcaster Brendan Burke, and his right-hand man all throughout his career with the Islanders has been Butch Goring, one of the best personalities in the game today. What different perspectives of the game has working with Butchie provided you?
Oh, everything. I mean, for a guy that comes in and gets this dream job at 32 years old, I wasn't alive the last time the Islanders won a Stanley Cup. That's not my fault, but that's a fact of life, so... to be able to have a guy sitting next to me that played on those teams, and to have a guy who can come at it, you know, from a player's perspective, come at it from a coach's perspective, come at it from a general manager's perspective. He has worn all of those hats in what has been quite the career, on top of being a top-notch analyst and broadcaster, you know, for the past decade. He provides all of those different insights. And so to have a guy like that sitting next to me, providing things that I can't, and I just get to pick his brain sometimes off the air, sometimes on the air. I think that makes me a better broadcaster, makes me more knowledgeable, but I hope that makes everybody else watching more knowledgeable as well as being able to kind of dive into what he's got hidden away back in there, while we're on the air.
The Words with Butch segment that you guys did throughout last season was certainly very fun and entertaining to watch. Why was that such a unique experience for you to be able to go out on the ice and talk about hockey with Butch Goring?
Yeah, it was not our idea. It was somebody else's idea. But, at the end of the day, they gave us a list of things. We circled the ones that we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then they turned a camera on us and went out there and did it. We didn't script it out. We didn't rehearse it. We just turned a camera on and did it because that's, sometimes how you get the best stuff. So we literally ad-libbed the entire thing. It took us probably an hour or two in one day, and we just kind of went out there and did it. So it was a lot of fun just kind of being on the ice. Now, I never played professional hockey, but I played my whole life. I grew up playing it. I played in high school. I played club hockey in college. So, to get out there on the ice and skate and kind of just be there as a prop for Butch to kind of explain some of the finer points of the game, it was one of the more fun days we had last year.
And one of my favorite moments of the season was your pregame monologues that became iconic over the course of the year, especially before the return to the Coliseum and John Tavares' reunion with his old foes. How much time did you put into those? What was your format in writing them, and how did they come to fruition?
Yeah, those were, we tend to be off sometimes formulaic in the way we come on the air in terms of, a broadcast of, hey, we are going to, right off the top of the show, we're going to have a couple of words. We'll go on camera with Butch and I. We'll talk for a little bit. We'll go to break. We'll come back. Shannon will go through a couple of things and then throw it back up to us after the anthem. We'll go do starting goaltenders, and then we drop the puck and go. And there were a couple of moments last year where I called our producer and I said, hey, I feel like this game needs to be different. I feel like we need to set a different tone. And I'm not sure if the starting lineup and goalies is the way to do that. And so I said, can you do me a favor and just let me take it out of the anthem and give me until puck drop. We'll move the starting goalies to the first, you know, break we have, and just give me that block. And I think, the first one I did it for may have actually been the Coliseum game on December 1st. Mm-hmm. And he agreed to it. And so that was the plan going in. And I sat down. It probably took me 20 minutes, half hour.
Yeah, it comes naturally.
Yeah, but it was write a little bit and then work on something else and come back and tweak it. And just kind of you try and picture yourself in the moment and try and create what it's going to be like in your head and write to that, and which is impossible. I mean, because that's the whole point of it. You don't know what it's going to feel like. And so I had kind of some guidelines going in, adjusted it from there, but it seemed to work well, obviously, for that first game. And so there were a couple other opportunities that I had where I kind of did the same thing. I called them and just said, hey, can I get it before the anthem tonight or after the anthem tonight? And wrote out a couple of things. And so, people seem to like it. I think it kind of, you know, for me, it's all about my job as a broadcaster is to bring emotion through the TV. If you're watching the game at home, I want you to feel the same things that people in the building are feeling. And so that's my effort to kind of do that, because there's two ways to do it. I could shut up and just let the crowd take over and hope you guys can translate that through the TV, or I can help it along. And so I kind of go with the help it along route, and hopefully people appreciate it.
We definitely do. And finally, before we let you go, one storyline, one emotional piece of the Islander season that you helped us and chronicled throughout the entire season was Robin Lehner. And he has been extensively covered on this show for his heroism and perseverance on the island. And you got to watch him every night and tell a story. In just one short year, how much of an impact did this man make on the island?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, he had such a unique story and a story that you couldn't help but root for the guy. And so you wanted him to succeed, obviously, because you're an Islander fan and he's the goalie, but you wanted him to succeed as a person, because that's a tough thing. And then to have him be as open and honest with everything he was going through, that's touching, because that's hard. And that's the big thing. There's so many people that are dealing with a very similar problem, but, you know, for whatever reason, don't feel comfortable being open. And he did it in such a public environment, in front of cameras and in different cities every night, and he never shied away. So to have him be that champion for his cause, which is a lot of causes, which is, you know, mental illness, which is you know, substance abuse, addiction, and all those things that are so hard to talk about. He talked about them. And then on top of battling all of those things, he thrived in it. So, it was one of those stories where you felt like you wanted to bring it up every time you made a save, but at the same time, you wanted it to just kind of fade into the background for him at the same time and bring it up when he needed to or when he wanted to. And so it was inspiring to see. And I think that, you know, obviously with him winning the Jennings and him having an opportunity to, you know, win the Masterton and nearly win the Vezina, hopefully he got the stage now and has the attention for, you know, exactly what he wants to say. And we wish him well. I don't think that there is, you know, a single Islanders fan that's going to.
A fantastic interview with one of the best. It is always an honor and a pleasure to have Brendan Burke on the show, but don't worry, guys, it does not stop there. There was some history made in the NHL late last night, and it was a little quiet under-the-radar news that will have an effect on the NHL for years to come. What was it? From the destination of all things hockey, we'll be right back with that answer.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call Nami Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. Nami Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good. Hello, this is Nicole.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterton-chamber.org. The Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Ron Francis is probably not a name you expected to hear this summer, but Seattle has changed that. Francis played 22 seasons in the NHL. He's fifth all-time in points, and that is not all. He is expected to be the first general manager of Seattle's new franchise in their history. Huge news. Absolutely gigantic news for the NHL. Because when the Vegas Golden Knights came into the league, this decision, this day, changed the NHL forever. You had moves like Alex Tuck and Eric Halla being acquired, Eric Karlsson potentially being traded with the cap space, William Karlsson coming over. All this circulation with the Vegas Golden Knights has led them to be one of the best teams in hockey, with one of the best cap situations in hockey, because they have their entire team locked up for the long-term future. Vegas has become a destination. They truly have. And that is all because of who is leading them, their general manager. And Ron Francis will try to replicate that. This was always going to be who has the most experience, who is the best choice for the job. Ron Hextall was the runner-up, and Hextall isn't the best choice, in my opinion, just because he's made a lot of bad decisions. Francis himself has also not made too many great decisions. He's made a lot of mistakes, but these two guys that were in contention for the job, they have experience. They know how to start a team from the ground up. This is Seattle. This is Coffee Town. This is Starbucks. They could have easily hired that analytics younger type geek that would have moneyballed this situation, and you could have seen a movie made about it in 20 years. But there's no playing experience. There's no general manager experience, and that would not have worked. Because this is an expansion draft. This is different. And even though hiring that analytics nerd would have resonated with Seattle, this is the right move for this franchise. Francis was most recently employed as a commercial real estate broker in Raleigh, which is not exactly where you want your general manager coming from, but that was after a pit stop, after a lot of years as general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes. He was hampered by a terribly small budget in Carolina. It was a tough situation to work with because he just had no money to spend. You see it with Carolina now. You see it with Carolina in the past. It's tough to be general manager of that team. He worked with that minimal space, that minimal chance to add players for a high term by drafting well and making shrewd trades. Sebastian Aho is a star. He was just offer sheeted by the Canadians, and he's back on a really good deal with Carolina. But it was Ron Francis who brought Aho in with the 35th pick in the NHL draft. That's not your number one pick, your number two pick, your number three pick. This was a depth pick that has the potential to change the Carolina Hurricanes franchise. And then you've got the Teuvo Teravainen deal from Chicago. That worked out wonders. And this 1-2 pair has led the Carolina Hurricanes to the Eastern Conference Finals. That was Ron Francis. That was his, both of those were his shrewd moves that another general manager would not have made. However, he's also made some mistakes. Francis never led the Hurricanes to the playoffs, so he played the long game. Will Seattle fans want Seattle to go to the Stanley Cup after their first year? I'm sure they will. That probably is impossible, but Vegas will put increased pressure on Seattle to contend immediately. And Francis doesn't do that. He takes a long, meticulous time. When he does pounce, sometimes it's not the best move. He signed Scott Darling to a 4-year contract. That didn't work out. He was just bought out by the Florida Panthers. Another move he made, which is interesting and I want to highlight, as assistant general manager for the Hurricanes back in the day, a decade ago, he traded for Andrew Ladd. And Andrew Ladd is a potential player that he could claim in the expansion draft or trade for in exchange for a first-round pick, getting Ladd and a first-round pick off the Islanders' hands in that cap dump. If Francis likes Andrew Ladd, that could be a move that is made. Andrew Ladd's on the Islanders. Anders Lee is also on the Islanders. And next week, we have an exclusive interview with Neil Sheehy, Anders Lee's agent, ex-NHL player, and neuromuscular surgeon. This interview is going to be a good one, guys. Sheehy represents Ryan Suter and Anders Lee, two stars in the NHL, and this year he has done the works. He has done the rounds with Lou Lamoriello. He met with him 9 times on the island, and boy, is this interview going to tell us a lot about those negotiations. Get ready to dive into what happened with Anders Lee and the Islanders. If Artemi Panarin would have come, how would that have affected Anders Lee? Was the $7 million per year that Lee agreed to always agreed on, was it just a battle of term? And how did the Kevin Hayes, the Jeff Skinner moves, how did that affect Anders Lee? We'll talk about that, as well as Sheehy wearing number 0, which is really cool. No one does that. And how he changes lives, known as the Magic Man, as a neuromuscular surgeon. He connects, disconnects in the body, and does something that no one else does in the world. Neil Sheehy's a really cool guest. So is Felix Bibu, who we talked to last week. So is Brendan Burke, who we talked to today. Neil Sheehy adding to the list 3 solid interviews in a row. The interviews keep on coming as we try to stay cool for the depth of the summer. The offseason is going to start to wind down, and we'll be back into the season soon. But until then, we're going to keep you busy with all these great interviews, while frankly, not much is happening in the hockey world. So, from the destination for all things hockey, we'll see you next week.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Now here's
Bobby Ebb
with Sonny.
Sonny, yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sonny, you smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true.